morning. I'm Tom Hall. Now we revisit a conversation I had last year with a Baltimore City school teacher who proposes a radical approach to educating young people. Jay Gillen was a founding teacher director of the Stadium School in Baltimore City, who is still teaching math in city schools and working closely with the Baltimore Algebra Project. In a book published last fall, he indicts an educational system that he says is stacked against poor and disadvantaged students. And he suggests that we change that by encouraging students to organize and rebel. The book is called Educating for Insurgency: The Roles of Young People in Schools of Poverty. When we spoke last September, he observed that there is a long tradition of insurgency dating to the very first days of our republic.
Of course, the first insurgency that the country acknowledges was the revolution in the 18th century. So the American Revolution is celebrated as an example of people taking control of their own lives and deciding that the forms of government and the system of society that they lived under wasn't adequate for their purposes, and so they rebelled and changed them, and we celebrate that as a country. Runaway slaves were not celebrated by the founders of the country and by many of the political sections of the country in the 18th and the 19th centuries. And in fact, the prohibition against protecting or harboring runaway slaves was written into the Constitution and continued to be parts of the law. So the slaves who were running away were rebelling. They were insurgents. There were many thousands of them. And they were young, mostly young. 75% were between the ages of 14 and 29. That was an example of young people who were not acknowledged by the country to be politically active, taking steps of their own, taking political power into their own hands and moving. And jumping ahead to the 1960s, a lot of the commotion that was created at the time by young people, and particularly by young black people in the South and Mississippi, which is the tradition that the Algebra Project comes out of, they were also not initially acknowledged as being political actors. They were just troublemakers. And it took the determined work of those young people persisting through challenges to their legitimacy as political actors to actually create political change, particularly in the Democratic Party that eventually, jumping ahead even further, allowed a black president to be elected.
And one of those young people in the 1960s was Robert Moses, the founder of the Algebra Project, which you founded in 1982. You've been doing a Baltimore Algebra Project since the mid-90s. How do you envision this student insurgency happening?
Well, there's kind of two stages or things to think about here. One is that young people in what we call schools of poverty, and particularly young people of color, are already insurgent. They don't allow the schools to simply operate as the adults, administrators, policymakers would like them to. And we don't really recognize that as political action, but I think that it is. I think that when young people decide that they're not going to go to class, or they're not going to do what their teachers or administrators ask them to do, or they're not going to do their homework, or they're going to be reading things but not the things that they're instructed to read, that's a type of insurgency. And so one stage is to just recognize that this is going on already, that there's already rebellion in virtually all of the schools of poverty in the country. And then the second stage is to think about, well, how can we support young people in rebelling in ways that are actually proactive and productive and that result in actual change, as opposed to just resisting the mess that's being served, but really creating something that's beautiful and imaginative and vital going into the future.
Jay Gillen, the new book is called Educating for Insurgency: The Roles of Young People in Schools of Poverty, on 88.1 It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, Jay, you talk about two important inadequacies of what you refer to as the dominant ideology in education. One of them is treating persons as things, and the other is, you say, that it suffers from a pervasive literalism. So let's talk about the things part first, and then what you mean about by literalism.
Mm-hmm. The general ethical wrong of treating persons as things is long acknowledged in our culture. Slavery was the most prominent example, where people were treated as property and conceived of as property. So obviously, that's a problem. And today, when we have the amazing, what I think of as pseudoscientific data crunching going on to evaluate what students are learning, how teachers are teaching, how schools are performing, we're really doing the same thing. And the reason is that people have aspects of their behavior and thinking that can be quantified as if they were just mere parts of the physical universe. But there are other aspects of human beings that can't be quantified in that way. And that's something that we all acknowledge, that people have ethical and moral dimensions in addition to physical dimensions. But the data crunching that is going on, the idea that somehow students and teachers should be able to fit into a box that's produced by this pseudoscience, is another example of treating persons as things.
And when you say a pervasive literalism is a big mistake, what do we mean by that?
Well, when we look at what young people are doing, we often see the surface of their behavior, not the what's underneath the surface. And it's obvious in some simple ways that we say people are acting out. For example, a young person who yells at a teacher or knocks a desk over in anger is acting out. And so what does that acting out mean? It means that they're trying to express something that's not literally, I want to knock a desk over. They're trying to express something about their feelings of how they're being treated, about what they desire, what their purposes are in contrast to the purposes of somebody who's causing them to become enraged or participating in that scene. And so the question is, can we think a little bit more about what young people are doing when they're resisting this educational system that's pressing down on them? Can we think a little bit more about what it means historically? Can we think a little bit more about what it means politically? Can we think a little bit more about how, with imagination and creativity, we can change those acts into something that is productive of real education instead of pseudo-education?
The Baltimore Algebra Project, as we said, based on, you know, the Algebra Project that Bob Moses founded in the early 1980s. Give us the general tenets of that approach and how you refer to it as the idealized Algebra Project classroom. How does that classroom look different from traditional classrooms?
The principal difference is that in the Algebra Project, we think of young people as the actual creators of their education. So we don't think that young people need adults to tell them how to learn. We think that young people have their own ideas about how to learn. They have their own ideas about what to learn. And what they need is to be supported in structuring their own communities, the communities of young people, in order to prefer an education that serves their needs and purposes as opposed to larger society's needs and purposes. And this isn't really theoretical. It's actually, we've been doing it. It's quite practical. And so the young people are able to make demands on themselves and on their peers to structure their own education and be productive academically and economically. And in fact, the Baltimore Algebra Project, the oldest member right now is 22 years old. It's an entirely student-run organization. The organization has paid young people $2.5 million over the past 12 years to provide math services and self-advocacy services to young people. So it can be done. Young people can organize themselves to learn. They can organize themselves to be political actors.
Jay Gillen, he's a Baltimore City school teacher and the author of Educating for Insurgency, The Roles of Young People in Schools of Poverty. We spoke last September. That's it for us today. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio,
WYPR in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Johnna McCone
and Connor Graham.
We have production help from
Christy Forrest
and Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. This month in Maryland history, on August 15th, 1915, a 20-year-old Baltimore man who had just earned his customs broker's license opened an import business on South Gay Street with two employees. A century later, Samuel Shapiro and Company is headed by Sam's granddaughter, Margie, who succeeded her father, Sig. The thriving logistics, global transportation, and regulatory compliance firm has 130 employees in six offices along the East Coast. We're back on Friday. Please join us.